What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Money Maker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
We are.
We are.
We are Cultivate.
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 We are Cultivate.
Although Jesse James is frequently the first person that comes to mind when the idea of the Old West is reduced to a single person, this perception of him as a hero is really just a myth. Perhaps it is appropriate that the mythical image of Jesse James as a gun-toting outlaw vigilante should stand in for the idealized image of the American frontier, as portrayed in popular culture. Outlaw Jesse James, a former Confederate guerrilla whose exploits set the tone for the wild decades that followed, became a romantic character in the years following his untimely death because he was compared to an American Robin Hood type figure. But Jesse James, in actual life, was anything but a hero. So join us as we discuss the life, the crimes, and the eventual death of Jesse Woodson James. Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Horror House. I am Dom.
And I'm Amy.
And as always, thank you for being here. Thank you for choosing our podcast. Even when Amy sounds like she's in a tunnel, you have decided to come on and join us today. And we love you for that. Amy, how are you doing, my lovely? I know that you are in sunny Scotland right now.
I am, which is also why I sound like I'm in a tunnel. So apologies if that's the case. It's still me, I promise. I am in sunny Scotland at the moment. I'm looking after my parents' dog, who's made a little appearance on our Instagram just now.
Yes.
I think just was born to be on camera.
Yes.
She would probably do a better job than me to be there. So, yeah, someone to consider if you ever look for a new co-host. But yeah, I'm all right. I do apologise for my sound quality if it is particularly bad. Also, I'm rocking for our YouTube viewers. I am rocking the Britney look today.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I quite like it. I wouldn't want to do it every week, but it's working today.
It kind of feels like I'm on a call with my bank.
Yeah, you have no money. Now it feels like a call.
Yeah.
That's the one.
You are high in your overdraft, Dom. Like,
yeah.
Just wow.
Yeah.
We are giving you money at this point.
Yeah. Are you okay? We're calling to make sure you're all right.
Oh, dear.
Oh, fuck. Do you know what I've just also thought of?
What?
I've got no true crime news whatsoever.
Oh, Amy.
Yeah, didn't even think about it, mate. Didn't even think about it. Should we do a quick Florida man while I'm on the...
Unbelievable.
While I'm on... What's the date today? It's the 30th of April. Florida man. And we'll do that. Let's do it. Talk amongst yourselves, people, while I'm doing this.
Florida man always comes in clutch. Always.
Absolutely.
He's the superhero we need, but we don't deserve.
This is so true. Oh, I've got a good one here. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go. Oh, this is great.
We got that. What should be better than my one?
Okay. So, our headline is... A man in Florida was arrested. I can't even speak.
Arrested.
Okay, arrested. I've gone all Jonathan Woff on it. Sorry. So, let's start again. A Florida man was arrested for kicking swans in the head.
Damn. What did the sports ever do to
that
him?
That seems mean. That seems Jesus. Unnecessary. I mean, and also quite impressive because they've got quite small heads in comparison to the rest of them.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The body's pretty big. The head's pretty small.
You it's a small target. It's a bigger target. Yeah, yeah.
So if he's being successful, I mean, well done. But also don't kick swans. That's me.
Don't kick swans.
The rest of the headline is witnesses said he was laughing.
Oh, Florida man.
What a dick.
What a
wow,
dick.
he looked like exactly the kind of man you would be expecting to kick swans, to be honest.
He looks like a swan kicker. Oh, he does.
If that's really not a swan kicker, I don't know what is.
That is 100% a swan kicker.
I mean, fucking hell. on Friday, Orlando police arrested a 34-year-old man. He's not 34, fuck off. After multiple people saw him at a park kicking swans in the head, quote, as hard as possible. Wow.
Man. Normally, sure. Florida man stories are quite funny. This is just mean.
This is just mean.
This is just a bit of a dickhead.
A Jacksonville Beach resident named Rocco Joseph Mantella seemed to be,
fantastic.
Quote, in karate when he observed Mantella kick two swans in the head and another in the back. The same witness also said he saw Mantella kick a duck, which seemed to be sleeping.
What did the duck do?
What a dick.
Why is the duck getting caught in the crossfire?
He was just having a little snooze, and this bloke went up to him and went, no, fuck you, duck. How dare you sleep on my dime? Another witness claimed he struck the same swan repeatedly, and his actions were, quote, intentional. Well, yeah. You don't accidentally kick a swan multiple times, do you? That's just mean. That's just mean.
Yeah. This Florida man is a bit of a bell end. I'm not going to lie, guy. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, no.
Don't tell me like the swan died or something, or the duck died, because that would just be sad.
I mean, he's just out. He didn't get taken to jail. He was released on a $1,000 bond, which doesn't seem like very much. But there is good news. Fortunately, no swans were reported to have sustained serious injuries. Quote, an area check for the swans that were attacked was conducted, but we were met with negative results, the report concluded. So at least no swans were harmed in the making of this Florida man. But also, don't kick swans. Like, just don't be a dick.
Yeah. Swans and
they
duck.
They are past swans. Like,
leave
they are
alone.
Absolute wankers. But
I'm like, also horrible. I'm also, well, to piggyback on that, swans are like, will fuck you up. I'm surprised he managed to, like, even get close enough to kick one, like, to be honest.
I was sitting once in a park, funnily enough, up here in Scotland, and I had a bag of chips, and I was like, I'm going to be nice and feed some of these chips to the swans because they look hungry and it's a nice thing to do. So I was flinging them the odd chip, having the odd chip myself, one for me, one for the swan, sharing, as I was taught to do in school and in nursery and, as you know, like, where I got my manners, swans. And one of these swans came along and just took the whole fucking bag out of my hand. The entire bag of chips. They didn't even care that they weren't sharing. He just took it and, like, swanned off, literally. So
you swan over here.
Ever since then, I've been like, fuck you, swans. I'm not feeding you anymore. But there's always ducks there as well. And ducks haven't done anything wrong. So you have to try and, like, selectively feed the ducks against the swans.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's political madness, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, Plus, I've gone on a tangent about swans,
you
but
have.
I feel it's valid.
You have.
Yeah.
Aren't swans like a protected animal here as well? That would never happen here. Wouldn't be kicking swans here.
I don't think they are protected. I think there's a thing that they all belong to the king.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
But I think they all belong to the king. And I think there's a law, a very old, very outdated law, that says that only the king is allowed to eat a swan in the UK because they technically all belong to him. So if you want to come to the, if you've got ideas, I know we've got a lot of listeners in America, Canada, all the countries that we never expected to have listeners in. But if you were planning to come to the UK and chow down on a bit of swan, you're going to be arrested because you're not allowed because they belong to the king.
I would love to, like, find a book of just ridiculous rules that we still have from, like,
the
1600s.
Oh, I've got another one. Do you know what? I've got quite a few of them because I recently put together a quiz for a friend, and this was one of the questions on that. There's a genuine genuine law in the UK. It's called the Salmon Act of 1986. 1986, so quite recent, really.
Jeez.
And one of the things that is covered by that law is that it's illegal in the UK to hold a salmon suspiciously. So, once again, if you are in America, Canada, any of the other countries outside of the UK that listen to our podcast, first of all, thank you for being here. And second of all, don't you fucking hold that salmon suspiciously, because we will come down on you like a ton of bricks.
What constitutes holding it suspiciously?
I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming like you've got the shifty eyes when you're holding it.
If you're holding it to your body like that, you're like,
holding it like a gun. If you're like pulling its little fin as a trick, I don't know. I don't really know what counts as suspicious, but I guess the police do, and it's up to them to decide if you look suspicious.
I can just picture like a police car, and there's like some Rozza sitting in it, and they're just like, right, so he slapped four people with the salmon. If he slaps one more, that's very suspicious.
That is suspicious.
Tough. Five.
You know what,
I suspect
that that's the reason the law exists, so that people don't get slapped with salmon. If you've seen Jackass, then you will know that getting slapped with a salmon is actually quite dangerous.
Yes.
That is probably why that law exists. But I don't know how you have to be holding the salmon in order for it to be deemed dangerous.
I don't know.
Do you have to look suspicious?
I read.
Or does the salmon have to look suspicious? Is it illegal to hold a suspicious salmon?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, he's walking with the salmon, and the Pink Panther theme tune is going on. Oh, that's a bit suspicious.
Arrest that bitch.
In his trench coat. He's looking a bit shifty.
Yeah. Do you know what? The bloke looks all right, but that salmon looks well dodged.
that's actually hilarious. I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah,
that's our country
law
is
that
amazing.
We still have. Yeah. Crazy, isn't it?
Craziness. So, from suspicious salmon to Jesse James, I'm sure someone can find a link in there somewhere. How much do you know about this American outlaw, Ames?
In all honesty, not very much. I know his name because you just told me. I know that he's a bit of a naughty boy. I know that he was a bit of a wild westy man. Last week when you told me that this is what we were going to be doing, which we don't always do.
That was purely accident.
We normally keep it a secret, and I find out when you find out, he finds out when you find out. But last week, Don was just like, fuck the rules, fuck the police, fuck their suspicious salmon, because I'm just going to tell Amy what we're doing. And it just came out. But you did recommend a film about him, and I purposely did not watch that film because I would rather find out from you.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know much.
You'll have to watch the show after.
Yeah, I will. To see all of the things that you got wrong.
Well, the family of Jesse James, like the sort of descendants, say that it is the most accurate portrayal of him. So I don't know, but the pressure's on. The pressure is on.
It was the most accurate portrayal of him up until
a podcast like 200 years later. Decided to talk about him.
Exactly. Until today. It's the most accurate telling of his story. I've got like a bit of hair that's just doing its own thing. Anyway, that's irrelevant.
Okay. Are we ready to talk about Jesse James and if he is really a Robin Hood type figure or very much not?
Yeehaw, bitches.
Yeehaw. Oh,
that not
dear.
Appropriate? I
no, that
cowboy.
Is appropriate. That is appropriate. It's very appropriate.
Phew. I'm so glad.
Cool. So, Jesse Woodson James was born on September the 5th, 1847. Going way, way back for this one, in Clay County, Missouri, near the site of present-day Kearney. This region of Missouri was predominantly inhabited by immigrants from the Upper South, particularly from Kentucky and Tennessee. And as a result, it came to be known as Little Dixie. James had two full siblings, a younger sister named Susan Lavinia James and an older brother named Alexander Franklin Frank James. You look confused.
Oh, the Frank is short for Franklin.
Yes.
Right, got it. I didn't think that, yeah, for a second there, I just thought they were like, oh shit, we need two middle names. and we'll just call him Franklin Frank.
We've got Franklin. What else can we do? Frank?
Where can we go from here? Yeah, no, but that makes sense. He was called Frank.
Oh dear.
Sorry. Sometimes I get a bit confused.
It's all good. I think he was pretty much always known as Frank James. At least that's what he was always sort of referred to in articles and stuff that I looked at.
I'm already not liking either of them, to be honest, because number one...
Yeah, I've literally just said where they were born.
It's not even anything to do with that. I don't know even know if that place is bad or not. It's literally nothing to do with that. It's just the fact that their names are two first names. Like, I don't trust it.
Oh, no,
you've got Jesse James, and then you've got Frank James, and the sister is Susan James, which, granted, wouldn't be like a normal name, but still two names. And James is a bit of a red flag for me anyway.
Okay.
Because James is just dickhead, if my ex is listening. he's just a bit of a... He's already a red flag for me.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter if he turns out to be, you know, if he found the cure for cancer because he's called Jesse, Amy immediately hates him. Doesn't matter what he does from this point forwards.
I'd assume he'd nicked it off someone else.
Just assume he stole it from somebody else.
Yeah, someone with only one first name.
So, before moving to Missouri, their father, Robert S. James, had a commercial hemp plantation in Kentucky and served as a Baptist minister. That seems like two very different sides of a coin, that he was growing hemp. He was also a Baptist minister. That seems like you sort of go against each other on that.
What do you think hemp is?
Huh?
What do you think hemp is?
Isn't it weed?
No, not really. No. I think they make like clothes and shit out of it. I know it has like medicinal properties, and I'm pretty sure that people mistake it for weed quite a lot because it looks quite similar, but it's not weed. No. It's just a normal crop.
Well, scratch that.
So, I mean, I think it's got a bit of a bad rep because a lot of hippies use it.
Maybe.
Like a lot of hippie types that probably are also on weed, I think, make use of hemp and its properties. And you get oil from hemp, you get oil from CBD, you know, I think there's a bit of crossover. But I see what you're saying, but also it's not what you think.
Okay. Well, thank you for correcting me.
I might be wrong. I might have totally like misunderstood hemp. I've just been eating hemp my entire life, high off my nut, what, this whole time. But I'm pretty sure it's not weed.
Okay.
If any of our listeners want to comment, let us know.
Yeah,
what is hemp? Yeah. You know, that's what we really need to get out of this episode. What is hemp?
Let us know.
Yeah, let's talk about it, you know?
Let's talk about it. So that might not actually be as bad as I first said it was, listeners. If it's not, and I've made myself look like a fucking idiot, I do that a lot. So it's, don't worry, it's a normal occurrence. Robert James would travel to Missouri to try his hand at cotton after his hemp plantation in Kentucky failed to take off. And you could probably guess where this is going, because now he's got a cotton plantation in the 1800s, which meant that Robert James had six slaves in 100 acres.
That's not fun.
He had slaves. So,
and I would assume that about him. And do you want to know why? Because he's got two first names.
Because he's called Robert James.
Just, nah. No. Red.
So, hair. As I said, he would move to Missouri to try running a cotton plantation after the hemp plantation didn't really work out. However, when his 6 slaves and 100 acres would fail to make him a millionaire, he would pack up again and move to California, because this was around the time of the California Gold Rush. And Frank would later die in California when Jesse was 3. So Robert's widow, Zerelda, would remarry twice after his passing. First to Benjamin Sims in 1852, and then to Dr. Reuben Samuel in 1855, who would take up residence in the James family house. Sarah Louisa, John Thomas, Fanny Quantrell, I believe, and Archie Peyton Samuel were the 4 children that Jesse's mother and Samuel had together. 7 slaves in total were purchased by Zerelda and Samuel, who used them primarily as farm workers for growing tobacco. They do like to try their hand at growing things, the James family.
Yeah, they flit around a bit, don't they? I mean, it was hemp, cotton, tobacco. Yeah. I mean, granted, these are all things that are potentially sellable, but I feel like they've not really stuck at anything for very long.
No.
Like, they're not really giving it a solid try, are they? Also, how many kids is that now? Like, I think I lost count. That's a lot of kids.
So there was Jesse, Frank, and then the sister.
And Susan.
Susan, that's the one.
Jesse, Frank, Susan. And now there's, what, 4 more?
And then she would have 4 children with Reuben Samuel. So 6 in total.
Seven
in total.
Are you okay? Did the hemp thing throw you off?
For the next 10 years or so, the James family would live in relative tranquility. But that did not imply peace. And that's because the James family was smack dab in the middle of the first act of the American Civil War in 1850s Missouri. The 1854 Kansas-Nebraska Act marked the beginning of the problems. The act gave each territory the option to vote on whether or not it would be admitted to the Union as a free or slave state. The fighting between pro and anti-slavery forces would last 12 years in a period known as Bleeding Kansas, until the end of the Civil War. Wild gangs of raiders and outlaws plowed deep into one another's territories to mercilessly massacre victims as the American Civil War would rage on. Both sides would routinely engage in hanging, lynching, and scalping. If you don't know what scalping is, watch Inglourious Bastards, because it's exactly what it sounds like.
If you don't know what scalping is, use your imagination.
Pretty gruesome. it's pretty gruesome. Reuben, who obviously at this point was Jesse's stepfather, for instance, was imprisoned by Union soldiers in 1863 and subjected to torture in order to learn more about his group of guerrilla Confederate fighters. The troops would hoist him by the neck with a noose tossed over a branch until he would pass out, and also allegedly tied up the 16-year-old Jesse and gave him a lashing despite the fact that he hadn't been involved in any of the raids up to that point.
What are you going to get out of a 16-year-old? Like, that just seems like it's more a bit, work.
Yeah, it's a bit much. It's a bit much.
I appreciate the workload isn't the thing that I should be bringing up here, obviously. You're abusing a 16-year-old child. But, like, you would think that, you know, it's just extra effort for not a lot of payoff.
Yeah. And I'm sure Jesse was like, what the fuck did I do? Like, dude, I'm 16. I'm just vibing.
I don't even know why I'm here. Like, what's going on?
So perhaps this personal act of violence against Jesse, previously too young to participate in the rebellions before, inspired him to join the Confederate guerrilla forces. Frank James would team up with a guerrilla group that rode into Lawrence, Kansas, the same year that the James farm was raided, and they killed about 200 men and boys. At the age of 16, Jesse James also joined these bandits in 1864, who were led by Bloody Bill Anderson. The now famous raid on Centralia, where several unarmed villagers were slaughtered and their scalps were amassed, was commanded by that same Bloody Bill. And if that wasn't enough, the mob would then attack a train of wounded and inactive Union soldiers, murdering at least 100 men in the process. Jesse and Frank James would pursue the survivors, who they didn't manage to get, and would shoot all of the men who attempted to surrender, including the commanding army major. Unsurprisingly, Union military authorities forced the James family to leave Clay County as a result of their actions.
Shocker.
Despite being told to go south past the Union lines, they instead proceeded north, crossing a state border and entering the Nebraska Territory. After Bloody Bill Anderson would be killed in an ambush in October, the James brothers would split. Frank would go on to Kentucky, and Jesse would travel to Texas under the direction of Archie Clement, who was one of Bloody Bill's lieutenants. It was here, at the age of 17, Jesse received a life-threatening chest wound when he was shot attempting to surrender after colliding with a Union cavalry patrol near Lexington, Missouri. Jesse would heal from his chest wound at his uncle's boarding house in Harlem, Missouri, under the care of his first cousin, Zerelda Mims, named after Jesse's mother. I'm very excited to see your reaction to this. Jesse and his cousin Zerelda would begin a 9-year relationship that led to their marriage.
Of course they would. Do you know what? As soon as you said, as soon as you said he was looked after by a female cousin, I was like, "Well, they're fucking obviously. they don't give a shit about inbreeding. They're just gonna get it on."
It's a different time.
Yeah, it's a different time. Different time.
Different time.
It's just it's not good. First cousins as well, like just.
Yeah, first cousin. No. Like that's a bit manky. I'm not gonna
you're playing
lie.
A dangerous genetic game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So
named after his mum as well. Literally in the throes of passion. He's screaming his mother's name.
Yeah, it's pretty
you would
rough.
Hope anyway, like if they're having a good sex life, which you know, I wish on anyone, even if they are a bit of a dick, then yeah, that's not good.
It's not just the whole thing. The whole thing.
The
their
whole
first cousin. Just this whole situation
ideal.
Is bad.
Yeah. And it went on for 9 years, which, you know, can't have been that bad.
The one, like, positive that I can glean from this specific cousin relationship marriage, it could be worse. It could be worse because Edward Allan Poe,
do you mean Edgar?
Edgar, not Edward. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm pointing out all your mistakes tonight. I'm
you
so sorry.
Really are. You really are. Let me try that again.
Yeah.
Edgar Allan Poe.
Do you mean Edward?
Also.
So sorry. Do it one more time. I won't do anything else.
So the one positive that I can glean from this is that Edgar Allan Poe did the same thing. He married, I'm pretty sure it was a first cousin, which is bad. So like this, it's also not great. However, I'm pretty sure Z or Zerelda was of legal age. And what I mean that is Edgar Allan Poe was 27 when he married his first cousin, who was 13. I'm pretty sure it was 13.
Okay.
So,
I mean, that's young, isn't it? That's
this isn't great. Don't get me wrong. Don't marry your first cousin.
Ideal. It's not ideal.
But it seems like she wasn't a child.
I mean, you've had to pull that one out the bag to justify what Jesse James did. But, yeah.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I think moral of the story is don't marry your cousin.
Especially
unless you're a member of a royal family.
Yeah.
Then it's almost expected.
Yeah.
But other than that, just, you know, find somewhere else. Yeah. Get on Plenty of Fish. Get on.
And if you're...
Anything. Hinge.
If you're going to, you might, that might be where you get into a relationship.
Meet your cousin, yeah.
Not only, like, don't marry your first cousin, but if you do, make sure that you're not close to your 30s and they are barely into their teenage years. Because that's
literally old enough to be, only just old enough to be a dad. Old enough to be a dad. Like, I think that's, do you know what? I was going to say that's my limit, but I've been someone that's older than my dad. So,
I mean, to be fair, like, being a dad at 13, that might have been relatively normal in Poe's time period. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay, I've got a genuine question because I feel like this has this has brought about a conversation. Dom, how old would you go and how young would you go?
Oh God, I'm going to open myself up to judgment from the internet.
I'll go afterwards, and I'm almost guaranteeing that mine's more shocking. So.
You know what? I don't. No one's actually ever asked me that before. If we're talking about younger, I think 10 years is probably the limit. I wouldn't go beyond that.
Okay.
Okay. As for older, I don't actually know about old. I've never thought about the upper age limit. I've always been 10 years younger is my cutoff. Because I don't want to be in my mid 30s and like going out with someone who's like 19, and then I'm just like the geriatric person in this relationship.
So what about older? Anything. What about
Maybe similar.
10 years older.
10 years-ish. Maybe.
So like mid-40s.
Yeah.
Just to out your age there.
Early 40s, mid-40s.
Okay, well, I'm gonna say mine. I would go anywhere between 20 to 60.
Fair.
For clarification, my dad's 57.
Fair.
But I think... age is just a number, isn't it? Unless it's illegal, in which case, Edgar Allan Poe, don't fuck your cousin who's 13. Like, it's common sense, isn't it? I mean, even I have like the odd 20-year-old contact me online, and some of them like are into weird shit, like they're calling me mummy and stuff. And that makes me feel a bit dirty. And I don't really want, and not in a fun way, you know, I don't really want, it's a bit weird, but. For the right 20-year-old, I'd go there. And then for the right 60-year-old, I'd also go there. And by the right 60-year-old, I mean the one with six figures in his bank account. So, Okay. Yeah, it's a bit of a broader gap. But not your cousin. At no point does my cousin fall into that spectrum.
Yeah. So it's uncertain whether Jesse and Frank James participated in the Clay County bank robbery of 1866. After the James brothers successfully carried out further robberies and became legends in their own right, some observers credited them with being the leaders of the robbery. Others have stated that Jesse was still bedridden due to his injuries and therefore could not have participated. No evidence has been discovered that connects either brother to the crime or definitively rules them out of being present. So I suppose it depends on who you believe. Jesse did not gain notoriety until December the 7th, 1869, when he, and quite likely Frank as well, robbed the Davies County Savings Association in Gallatin, Missouri. The robbery would yield little money, and Jesse is thought to have shot and killed the cashier Captain John Sheets. And that was because he mistook him for Samuel P. Cox, who was a militia officer who had killed Bloody Bill Anderson during the Civil War. And Jesse obviously wanted to get a bit of revenge and ended up shooting just an innocent bank clerk. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oops.
What do you reckon he said?
Big oops.
Like when he noticed, do you reckon he just went, oh, fuck.
I don't know. It's Jesse James. He probably just didn't really care much.
Guy's just bleeding out on the floor, and he's like, do you know what? I don't know if anyone's ever told you this, but you look so much like Samuel Peacock. Like, you are the spit, mate. And that is why you're dying.
Yeah, yeah, but you're not. So it's I apologize for shooting you.
Yeah, bless him. What was the bank clerk name? What was his real name?
Where was it? Captain John Sheets.
Oh, sorry, Sheets. Sorry, mate.
Sorry, Sheets.
It's unfortunate.
Mondays.
Mondays. Yeah. Don't you just hate it when you think it's going to be a good day and then you get shot?
And then you get shot.
Yeah, just so rubbish.
Because someone thought you were someone that you're not.
With not even a cousin to nurse you back
what
to health.
What a crappy day. A massive manhunt was launched to apprehend the killers, but Frank and Jesse would rapidly elude capture. The 1869 robbery established Jesse James as the most well-known survivor of the former Confederate bushwhackers. He was officially labeled a outlaw for the first time, and Missouri Governor Thomas T. Crittenden offered a bounty for his capture. This was also the beginning of an association between James and John Newman Edwards, who was the editor and founder of the Kansas City Times newspaper. Jesse's and the James Younger gang's noble image was meticulously cultivated with the help of Edwards, who penned articles about the gang, declaring, quote, the James gang are men who might have sat with Arthur at the Round Table, ridden in a tourney with Sir Lancelot, and won the collars of Guinevere. Popular representations of Jesse depict him as a Robin Hood figure who robbed from the rich and gave to the poor, which was something that Edwards helped cultivate. Sort of he was the one who was putting the positive spin in the media of Jesse James. However, you'll be shocked to know that there is no proof that the group ever distributed any of their riches to the poor. And it's quite likely that Jesse only circulated the takings within his inner circle and within the gang and kept the rest himself.
I probably would too.
Yeah, probably. I can't even front and say that I would probably keep it for myself. I'm not going to.
I mean, I'm the one putting the effort in, you know. It's my neck on the line. I'm the outlaw here.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna keep my spoils. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm poor. Why do you think I'm out here fucking 60-year-old?
I'm so poor. Not.
Sorry, I just need to make that clear. I don't do that. It's just a bit. For those that decide to comment, think that everything I say on this podcast is real. I just do it for the joke.
For those that have literally tuned in now, she doesn't fuck 60-year-old.
Unless she happens to be rich in 60, in which case, call me.
So as mentioned just a few bullet points ago, the James brothers would form the James Younger gang, which included Cole Younger and his brothers John, Jim, and Bob, as well as Clell Miller and other former Confederates.
I don't know why those names made me laugh.
John, Jim, and Bob.
John, Jim, and Bob.
John, Jim, Bob.
They're creative.
They are. The Wild West had some... It was wild, but the names very much weren't. Jesse James as the gang's most prominent face, though operational command was likely divided among the members. The gang committed robberies from Iowa to Texas and Kansas to West Virginia. On July the 21st, 1873, they would try their hand at train robbery, derailing a Rock Island Line train west of Adair, Iowa, and taking around $3,000, which doesn't sound much, but in 2023 money, that is $76,000. So, yeah, in 1873, $3,000 was probably quite a bit of money, I imagine.
Yeah. Probably I bet $3,000 could have bought you like houses.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
That's so depressing, isn't it?
That is quite depressing. That is $3,000 is like the rent of a box room in London.
Pretty much. That's the stage we're at now.
Yeah, it's not great. The gang only held up passengers twice, and in all other cases, they took only the contents of the express safe in the luggage compartment. When portraying James as a kind of Robin Hood figure, John Newman Edwards would make sure to emphasize such approaches, that they didn't rob from the people, only took the money from the safe.
Yeah. I think there might have been other reasons for that, to be honest, other than moral. But I know? I don't know Jesse James. Maybe I'm wrong.
Robbing trains, however, would prove to be quite a perilous decision because the other renowned outlaws of the West, the railroad barons, had their own private army to stop and bring down gangs such as the James Younger Gang. And that private army was, of course, the Pinkerton Detective Agency, which had years of expertise at smashing skulls at labor strikes and chasing down counterfeiters for the federal government. So they know their stuff. They know what they're doing. Don't mess with the Pinkertons. If you've played Red Dead Redemption, you know all about the Pinkertons.
You don't want to get your skull smashed.
Nope. When they received the commission to apprehend Jesse James, the Pinkertons went just a little bit too quickly and were trapped in an ambush in which a constable and many of the agency's men were shot. Following that, Alan Pinkerton himself would head the pursuit, treating the case as a personal vendetta. You fucked up when the person who's the organization is named after is like, well, it looks like I'm going to have to do this myself.
Yeah. I was trying to think of like a cartoon equivalent and I was going to say it's like Scooby-Doo coming, but that's not quite the same. Yeah, I couldn't think of anyone else. Sorry.
To be fair, I'm down for just any Scooby-Doo reference. I'm all up for a Scooby-Doo reference. Alan Pinkerton would begin working with former unionists who resided near the James family farm, culminating in a raid on the James home that was deliberately converted into a arson attack when the Pinkertons threw a firebomb through the window. If you're like, that probably didn't end well, it didn't, because the firebomb would explode. And
shockingly enough,
it would result in the death of Jesse James's young half-brother Archie, and one of Zerelda Samuel's arms was blown off.
I wonder how happy Jesse James was after that.
So he wasn't too thrilled. And I also love that, like, Alan Pinkerton was like, fine. I'm going to do this myself, because obviously I asked you guys to do it and then you're cocked up. So fine, I'll do it. I'll head it. And then it ends with them killing James's young half-brother and Zerelda Samuel's missing an arm. Whoops.
Just having a talk with him afterwards, like, Alan, this is why we don't let you out, right? This is why we're handling shit now and you're just sitting in your office looking pretty.
This is why you do the paperwork, Alan.
You take it too far, all right? This isn't the 1850s anymore. We've moved on. You just need to calm down. Let someone make you a cup of tea, put your feet up, and just do your press conference. No more firebombs, all right?
This happened before, Alan, and then there's a reason why we pulled you off of the field, and you've gone and done it again.
We've talked about this, Alan.
Who gave you the firebomb? We told them specifically, do not give Alan a firebomb, because this will happen.
Someone is getting fired. And also firebombed.
So Pinkerton would later deny that the raid's purpose was arson. Don't know if that's going to wash after the end result of that. However, biographer Ted Yeatman, fantastic name, just like that, just like the firebomb was yeeted through the window.
What a great name. Ted... He would not survive in 2024 with a name like Yeatman.
He wouldn't.
You are really going to be meme central.
He really wouldn't. Ted would discover a letter from Pinkerton at the Library of Congress in which he stated his plan to, quote, burn the house down. You can say it wasn't intentional arson, but it kind of sounds like it was.
Yeah. No, I meant it metaphorically. I'm going to capture Jesse James and metaphorically burn this house down.
Yeah.
I've done such a good job.
That's it.
I'm going to get a star on my star chart.
And Zerelda might lose an arm. And Archie might die. It may happen. It might.
Did Archie actually die? Oh, that's sad.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't do anything, I don't think.
Neither
did Zerelda's arm, to be fair. My sympathies are in the wrong place, clearly.
Several local accomplices suspected of working with the Pinkertons were found dead in their homes. The James Younger gang became more selective about their targets. And one of them, the Northfield Bank in Minnesota, would prove to be a watershed moment in the lives of Frank and Jesse James. But before we get to that, I think now's a good time to have a little break. Have a little breather before we get to the spiral that is the second part of this here episode. Amy, what do you think?
Yeah, I reckon so. I reckon I need to brace myself.
Yeah. It all goes a bit Pete Tong for Frank and Jesse at this point. I'm not going to lie to you guys.
I mean, it's all going great so far anyway. But if it's getting worse. I definitely need to top up my drink, I reckon.
Gets a bit worse. Before we get to that, we'll take a quick break and we'll see you here in just a few moments.
Hi, creeps and freaks.
Creepies and freakies.
I'm Michelle.
And I'm Courtney.
And we are In the Nick of Crime. We come to you weekly with true crime, some spooks,
and a little bit of comedy.
We focus on being a voice for victims.
But we also like to rake the offenders through the coals.
We can never really seem to take ourselves too seriously, but we do hope you'll join us.
So keep it creepy and stay freaky.
And we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye! Bye.
Hey, friends of Horror House, I'm Britt.
And I'm Alexa.
And we're the hosts of They Don't Stay Dead.
We're a paranormal podcast from Australia, and we've made it our mission to share with you all the real-life ghost stories and haunted locations from our home, as well as some encounters with supernatural beings and reports of unknown mysteries.
From haunted asylums and ghost ships to big cat cryptids and alien encounters, there's something for everyone. We release new episodes every Thursday. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Be sure to check out our Instagram at They Don't Stay Dead for weekly updates. We get a little bit spooky and a lot silly. So join us for some laughs and a tale of the unknown.
Stay spooky, paranormies. Back to you, Dom and Amy.
Welcome back, everybody, to part dos of this week's episode about the life and crimes of one Jesse Woodson James. Amy, I know part one started off as probably a bit of a boring history lesson. But how have you found Jesse James so far? What do you think of him? Do you still think he's a dick because of his first two names? Like, where are we at?
Do you want to know what's really upset me?
Go on.
And I don't know if it's because I was so enraged in the first half that I just wasn't paying attention. But his name's Jesse James, right? Two first names. Fucking annoying. Middle name is a last name.
It is. Yes, it is.
What? Like, what fucking naming convention are we using for this guy? So that's even more annoying. So I'm not too keen on him. Also, you know, he killed someone. I mean, he's killed lots of people at this point. So not his biggest fan, but mostly the name. The name's annoyed. I did get called out last week because when we were talking about Elliot Rodger, like, my biggest outrage was the fact that he was really unoriginal when naming his manifesto.
Oh, yeah, I saw the
story. I got called out for that. but this week, I'm just really annoyed that Jesse James has two first names and last name for his middle name. So
Jesse James is the worst person we've covered so far in our episodes together. Jesse James is the worst.
Yeah.
So, Amy is not a fan of Jesse James at the moment, more so because his middle name is Woodson. So she likes him even less.
It's not his fault, but I don't care.
So surely she can't hate him anymore after part two. But we'll see. Are you ready, Ames, to get stuck into the rest of this here episode?
I'm always ready to hate. Yeah, I'm ready.
So the Northfield bank heist would take place on September the 7th, 1876. That morning, the James Younger gang rode into town and would gather at the bank. Two of the group members took up sentry positions outside while the rest of the gang entered the bank to break the safe. Surprisingly, the clerk decided it was a good idea to lie and claim that the safe was on a time lock, despite one of the robbers putting a knife to his throat. Sorry. I admire the conviction. I think if that was me, I probably would have just been like, you know what? Have at it. I'm not losing my life over this. Like, you go and rob, do what you need to do.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that I'd try to be brave and like stop them. But to be honest, I wouldn't. It's not my money. Who gives a fuck? No. Like, I'm not going to die about this. Just take it. It's really not an issue. And that's what most bank staff are trained to do, is just to be like, no, money's replaceable. Just let them take it. I'm taking us on a lot of tangents today, but this one is sort of relevant. My mum used to work in the cash office.
Amy's robbed a lot of banks.
I've robbed a lot of banks. No, I haven't. My mum used to work in a cash office for a supermarket. So she used to look after the ATMs. And she was once held at gunpoint.
What?
While they were robbing the ATM. They came in with a sawn-off shotgun.
Jesus.
And basically held my mum at gunpoint to take the money. And her immediate response was, all right.
Yeah.
Here you go. Here's the money. I think she gave them a bag to put it in. because she's a helpful woman, is my mum. To be honest, they probably could have gone in without the gun and she would have gone, do you need a bag? Right, let me help you. Let me tuck that away for you. Do you want a cuppa? She's a lovely woman, but she probably would have done that anyway. But that's literally what you're trained to do. Like, she never got in trouble for that. It's literally just a case of, okay, take it. It's yours. So if you're sitting there thinking, oh, I'm going to make up a lie that could potentially get you shot, yes, it's very brave, but I'm guessing A, it didn't work, and B, it's potentially really stupid.
It didn't work because the clerk got beaten and his skull got shattered. It didn't work.
Oh.
So,
back to my previous point, stupid.
I do kind of admire in the audacity just to be like, sorry, safe's on a time lock. I mean, old it's West like, Bank clerks are built different, obviously.
It's like running up to Godzilla with a baseball bat.
It kind of
you
is.
You tried, but it did fuck all. So, bye-bye.
It didn't end well. As I said, as the clerk was beaten and his skull shattered, the crowd outside the bank would become suspicious of the two men outside and would begin a fight outside of the bank. The two sentries or two gang members outside the bank would fire into the air to clear the street, which would have quite the opposite effect, and things degenerated into a shootout. The men inside the bank halted what they were doing and fled, stopping only to shoot the clerk who had lied to them to hold them up. So he got beaten and he got his skull shattered, and then he just straight up got shot. So poor guy.
Moral of the story, kid, don't tell lies.
Yes. Just let him have the money. As Amy said, it's not worth stopping him. Just let him take it.
Yeah.
The group would narrowly escape Northfield, leaving two dead gang members behind. The brothers would eventually separate from the other gang members and flee to Missouri. The militia would quickly locate the Youngers and another bandit, Charlie Pitts. Pitts would die in a gunfight, and the Youngers were imprisoned. Except for Frank and Jesse James, the James Younger gang had, by all intents and purposes, been utterly destroyed. So if you want to watch an instructional video on how to rob a bank, I'm not saying you should, but if you're interested in robbing a bank and you want to know how to do it, I wouldn't look at this case, because this kind of went a bit sour.
Yeah.
It didn't go good.
Also, if you are looking up how to rob a bank, don't Google it.
No.
That's dumb. Like 101.
Yeah.
Not the best way of doing it. This definitely isn't the best example. And if someone tells you while you're robbing said bank that there's a time lock on the safe, sus.
Very sus.
Although I'm pretty sure most safes have time locks these days, but, you know.
But yeah,
I'm pulling out like some really fucking random anecdotes tonight, but they're all somewhat relevant. So this one, I've only ever seen one bank safe, and it's in Revolution Bar in Leadenhall Street in London, which is now a bar, not a bank anymore. But the safe is still there. And the only reason I saw it is because I was at a... Why have I started this story? I've just realised how this story ends. But now I'm going to have to finish it, aren't I? I was at a kink fair. Fair where people that have specific kinks go to meet other like-minded people. And I was there, and there was a BDSM bondage display in the safe. So I do know what an 1800s bank safe looks like. But not for a reason that you might think.
Wow.
I don't know if they had a time lock on it. Presumably not. Why? I've been there for like 15 minutes. But
it was probably not the most important part, to be honest.
It's not what I had my eyes on, if I'm being 100% on it.
I
was a bit distracted at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen one. They're fucking huge. And
they're massive. Like old bank safes are ridiculous.
There was literally a display going on in this bank vault and with an audience. So it was, they're pretty big. So if nothing else, that story has given you an idea of the scale of a bank safe. You're welcome. Don't read anything else into it.
Just ignore everything up to bank safe. If your mum listens... Okay, I was about to say, I'm sure your mum's heard worse on this podcast.
I think I might have told her that I'd gone, to be honest, so it doesn't really matter.
The Northfield bank attempted robbery went a bit wrong for the James Younger gang. Later in 1876, Jesse and Frank would appear in Nashville, Tennessee, under the identities of Thomas Howard and B.J. Woodson, respectively. Frank would appear to calm down, but Jesse, the the old outlaw that he was would remain restless. So in 1879, he formed a new gang and returned to his life of crime, hijacking a train at Glendale, Missouri, now part of Independence, on October the 8th, 1879. However, this new gang was not made up of the same battle-hardened guerrillas that the James Younger gang was made up of. Rather, it was petty thieves, and they quickly turned against one another or were arrested. It's believed that Jesse James himself killed one gang member to stop him from turning himself into the authorities and scared away another.
Good.
So,
high staff turnover.
Doesn't sound like the greatest gang in the world, but Jesse, obviously that crime itch was too enticing. He had to go back to it.
You can't say he's not his father's son, you know? No. Like, his dad was like, I'm going to grow hemp. Nah, fuck it. I'm going to grow cotton. Nah, fuck it. I'm going to grow tobacco. Jesse James just like, okay, I lost my gang. New gang.
Got a new gang.
So, you know, they're definitely a family.
Yeah.
Family trait.
So, with his gang practically destroyed, and increasingly paranoid, Jesse James trusted only the Ford brothers, Charlie and Robert Ford, who had become very, very important in the rest of this story. Although Charlie Ford had gone on raids with James, his brother Bob Ford was a very eager new recruit. He was kind of the first super fan. He very much put Jesse James on a pedestal. He very much believed the myths and the legends surrounding Jesse. Okay. And
just fangirled out.
He was very much a fangirl. James had wanted the Ford brothers to live with him and his family for safety reasons. However, by this point, Robert Ford had secretly negotiated with Missouri Governor Thomas T. Crittenden to bring in the legendary outlaw. On the morning of a planned robbery on April the 3rd, 1882, the James and Ford families would share breakfast. Jesse would bring his revolvers to the table, which was unusual for him, and that implied that he may have suspected something. Jesse had just read in the media that gang member, hold your laugh, Amy, or try, Dick Liddle had admitted to his role in fellow gang member Wood Heights murder. You did very well. I'm impressed.
Dear, that is unfortunate.
It's not great. It is not. I would have changed that as soon as I could.
Yeah. Why'd you break up with that guy?
I mean,
poor guy.
It surely now Jesse James or Jesse Woodson James is not the worst name we've come across so far. Surely this is worse.
I tell you what, you say that, I'd still trust Dick Liddle. What is it? Dick? I can't even say Dick, it. Liddle.
It's Dick Liddle? Like it's
the supermarket.
L-I-D-D-I-L. So I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Liddle.
Liddle. Liddle.
Liddle.
I don't know. But I'd trust a little Dick over Jesse fucking James. He just sounds like, if you imagine that you don't know anything about Jesse James, but instead what you know is that he's gone to college in America and he's part of a frat, right? Mm. Now what is Jesse James like? Because in my head he's a fuckboy.
No, fair.
Like that is just the name. I'm sorry, I've got like a really bad name prejudice, I think. Yeah. If there's any Jesse James, well, it's not even just the name Jesse. Like, Jesse, I'm fine with. Although, for a man, it conjures, fuckboy images. But it's Jesse James that I've got the issue with.
Yeah. That's fair. That's
fine. Yeah. But yeah, Dick Liddell is just unfortunate.
It's bad, isn't it?
You can only pray that it's ironic. It's bad.
Like
yeah, for well, him,
that's
and
it.
That guy is packing. If that's the case, then it's funny. But if it's not and it's true, then yeah, just change it.
So, James had just read in the paper that gang member Dick Liddell had admitted to his role in fellow gang member Wood Heights murder. And of course, this raised the eyebrows of Jesse James as to why the Fords hadn't told him about it. Robert Ford would later state that he believed Jesse knew that they were going to betray him and bring him in as the wishes of Thomas T. Crittenden. However, Jesse would do quite the opposite of I think what a lot of people would probably expect. You would expect maybe he would kill the Fords before they would bring him in. But Jesse didn't do that. Instead of confronting Charlie and Bob, Jesse would cross the living room and place his revolvers on the sofa. He would then turn his back and see a dusty picture hanging on the mantle. So he stood on a chair to clean it. I think his last word, or like his words when he saw the picture was, doesn't that picture look dusty, or something to that effect.
Okay.
It was here that Robert Ford would draw his gun, with Jesse turning his head slightly when hearing the gun cocking. And Robert Ford would fire a single shot into the back of Jesse's head. Jesse James, the infamous outlaw, would topple to the floor, and he was dead at 34 years old. Not what you expected, I'm going to assume.
No. What gave it away? It just seems like a very odd time to decide to do spring cleaning. He must have known. He must have known it was going to happen.
That's my thinking, is that he, at this point, he was just a bit tired of running, and he...
Yeah, a bit done.
He was just a bit done with it, and he was suspicious of them not telling them about Wood Heights' murder, and he probably, yeah, I think he was just tired.
I mean, he must have known what they were going to do, because I'm not being funny, but if you're going to go dust a picture, you don't need to put your pistol down.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Like, and he's made the effort to walk across the room to put them down, to show them that he's not armed. It's almost like saying, okay, just do it. Just do what you've got to do. Although, also, if that was the case, just say something better as your last words, like anything. That picture looks dusty is possibly the worst last words I've ever heard.
I paraphrase. I'll put my hands up. I don't know if that was the exact quote, but it was something to that effect.
But yeah, and any version of that phrase is just... You're going to be remembered by these words. Like, you're going to, you know, people are going to write these down in books. And that's what you've chosen?
I mean,
you could have literally gone, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. First. And it would have been cooler than what you said. You sound like a 50s housewife, which is difficult because the 50s haven't even happened yet.
No.
But, well, they have. The 1850s have, but not the 50s I'm referring to. I digress. Shit last words. Don't like Jesse J. Just going to put it out there. Putting that on the table now. Don't like Jesse James. Don't like his name. Don't like his last words. Don't like his dusty pictures. So
We've said absolutely nothing about his crimes. It's literally just his name and his last words.
I mean, the crimes are obviously bad. Like, you know, obviously, we don't condone the crimes. We don't condone bank robbery. We don't condone shooting people, particularly people that you just happen to mistake for someone else. Yep. Obviously, we don't condone those things. But he has crimes that aren't technically crimes. And one of them is his name.
The other one is his last words.
Is his last words. These are both, you know, crimes for which death can be the only appropriate penalty.
So
otherwise, they wouldn't be his last words. But you get what I mean.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, that was
Jesse James.
The end of Jesse James. Not the end of our story, but that was the end of Jesse James.
Yeah.
An unexpected. I mean, I've seen the film, The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. I've seen it a few times, so I knew, like, this was how it ended. But it's, you know, it's quite the opposite of what you would assume would be the end of Jesse James.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as far as, like, assassinations that have gone on to be quite famous go, very, very dull. Very, like, run-of-the-mill, you know, just shot in the back of the head type assassination. Not interesting at all. And when you think about the other famous assassinations, like JFK and stuff, it, you know, or Lincoln, that's, you know, he got shot, but it's more of a story. Yeah. Or like Bonnie and Clyde, you know, fucking hell, that was a scene. That was insane.
Yes, it was. They went out in a blaze of glory.
Exactly.
Oh, they did.
So yeah, if I ever go on a crime spree that ends in my assassination, I'm going to Bonnie and Clyde it. I'm not going to Jesse James it.
Yeah, I think that's how I would go as well, to be honest.
And you can bet your ass that my final words will be yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
but yeah, a not outlawish end to the life of Jesse James. Yeah. So, understandably so, a person of Jesse James's stature, his death would become quite the nationwide phenomenon, quite the nationwide news story. The Fords would make no attempt to hide their involvement in the assassination. And Robert Ford would contact the governor to receive the bounty, receive the award for Jesse's death. However, when the Ford brothers did turn themselves in, they were quite shocked to learn that they had been charged with first-degree murder. Uno reverse card. Like Crittenden.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, you can have your bounty, but also you're under arrest. awkward, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But in a quite... whirlwind turn of events, and this happened in the span of one day. The Ford brothers were indicted, pled guilty, sentenced to death by hanging, and then granted a complete pardon by the governor.
Holy shit. That's a lot
whirlwind.
In a day.
Yeah,
that's a bit much.
Can you imagine? I would be fucking exhausted. I would be like, what a day.
I tell Jesus. You what, at the end of that day, you have earned a nap.
Yeah, yeah.
Pop your head 100%. Down. Get yourself a blankie.
100%.
Take 20 minutes because that's a roller coaster.
I would use that as well. If anyone was like, I've had such a hard day, I would be like, mate, I got indicted, sentenced to death, and then a complete pardon all in a day.
Like, yeah.
It's been stressful. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, at least it ended with a pardon. Could have been worse.
True.
But, you
that
know, yeah, that is. That's a lot. That is just a sign of how slow our judiciary system is these days.
After receiving a small portion of the reward money, definitely not as much as they expected to get, the Fords would flee Missouri. Later, they appeared in a touring stage show where they would reenact the assassination night after night. Robert Ford would recount his story and play out the assassination of Jesse James. However, his masquerade would be short-lived as he was met with catcalls, jeers, hoots, and challenges. I don't know how I feel about that. Like,
I mean, it makes sense. Like, what are you up to tonight, Billy Bob? Are you off to doing anything fun? Yeah, I'm actually going to go and see that play. You know, the assassination of Jesse James. I've got big plans. I'm going to heckle that dickhead.
Oh, no, no. I mean, not. I'm not the heckler. I don't know how I feel about him reenacting this night after night after night after night.
I mean, what else is he going to do, to be fair?
I mean, true.
Like, once you're known as that, there's not really many avenues for you to go. It reminds me a bit of, do you remember the episode we did on the Kobe cannibal?
Yeah.
Where he was, well, by a shit ton of technicalities, released. And then he was just like, well, I can't really do much, so I'm just going to write a book about what I did.
Fair, no.
Like, what else, once you're known nationwide as the man who shot Jesse James, what other job opportunities are there for you, I suppose? Although, presumably he wasn't an actor before, so...
No. So, public opinion was divided between those who opposed Ford's murder of Jesse. And I think that was very much an opinion, hence the name of the film, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford.
Yeah.
The general consensus was he shot him in the back and he was very much branded as a coward.
He shot an unarmed man in the back of the head.
So, opinion was divided between those who opposed the murder of Jesse and those who believed it was past time to put an end to the infamous outlaw. So what happened to Charlie and Bob Ford? I hear the voices ask. Well, Charlie, suffering from at this time period, incurable tuberculosis and a morphine addiction, would commit suicide in Richmond, Missouri on May the 6th, 1884. As for Bob, he would later have a tent saloon in Creed, Colorado. On June the 8th, 1892, a man by the name of Edward O'Kelly would travel to Creed with and loaded a double-barreled shotgun. Entering Robert Ford's saloon, he would simply say, quote, "Hello, Bob," before shooting Robert Ford in the throat and killing him instantly.
Okay.
And I'm not going to lie, the fact that he was just like, "Hello, Bob," and then shot him, that's cold, and I kind of like it.
Yeah, I like that one. I was going to say, like, it's last words, not great, but last words before you shoot someone, peak.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I do still feel like he could say something better. But "Hello, Bob," and then cold-blooded, shot in the throat.
Cold-blooded
well.
Shot. Yeah, yeah.
Shot in the
pretty
throat.
Pretty hardcore.
Wow.
Pretty hardcore. I forgot to put this in my notes, but off the top of my head, O'Kelly would be charged with first-degree murder, sent to prison, obviously, and then a petition signed by 7,000 people was sent to the governor of the prison, I think, and then he was pardoned and released. And then he died later on in a fight with the police. So, yeah.
Okay.
A bit of a whirlwind for O'Kelly. So following his death, Jesse James would be packed on ice and transported by train to Kearney, where he was displayed and visited by hundreds of friends, fans, and curious visitors. He was initially buried on the family property, but was eventually relocated to a cemetery in Kearney. The original footstone is still present, but the family has since replaced, the family replaced the headstone. Jesse's mother, Zerelda, penned the following inscription for him. Quote, "In loving memory of my beloved son, murdered by a traitor and a coward whose name is not worthy to appear here." Oh.
Wow.
Scorned.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Z.
Do you know what? Sorry, I've got a bit quiet, but the reason is I'm pretty sure something happened with Jesse James' grave that was weird. Because I read a book I can't remember what it's called for the life of me, but basically the book centers around famous people and what happens after they die and their remains and what, you know, the crazy stories that happen to them. And I think from memory, they, do you know what? I'm going to try and Google it, so just bear with me.
Are you going to say that they, I can't think of the name. I was going to say they dug up his grave. Are you going to talk about that?
They, yeah, it's, sorry, is this in your note?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, in that case, I'm going to shut up. Yes. I was going to show off and be like, I already know. But if it's in your notes, then we'll go with it. But yeah, it's, if it's what I remember it to be, then it's fucking weird.
Okay. I think it will be, because it sounds like we're on, it sounds like we're on the same track.
Yeah. Is this a clue?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I think maybe what I'm thinking might be different. But yeah, go for it.
Okay. Well, we're kind of. There might be, we might diverge. You know, you might go off the junction a little bit and I might carry on going. But where?
I mean, what else is new? Right. I pretty much always do.
So was it really Jesse James who Robert Ford shot in the head?
That's not where I thought you were going.
Okay. Okay. I'll get through this and then.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm on the same track.
I want to know what your theory is.
Choo-choo. Let's go.
So, rumours about Jesse James's survival spread almost immediately after his death was declared in the newspapers. Some said that Robert Ford murdered someone other than James as a part of a complex scheme to allow Jesse to escape justice. These stories garnered very little credence, both then and in the many, many years since. There was someone who would later claim to be the infamous outlaw, and that was J. Frank Dalton, who was a sprightly 101 years old when he made his first public appearance in 1948. Dalton would die on August the 15th, 1951, in Granbury, Texas. Hood County Sheriff Orrin Baker, I believe, performed a visual post-mortem examination and discovered 32 bullet wounds and a rope burn around his neck. That seems familiar, doesn't it? He was interred in Granbury Cemetery, where his headstone reads, quote, Jesse Woodson James. In 1995, the body buried, I think this might be where you were going, the body buried in Kearney, Missouri, labeled Jesse James, was unearthed and mitochondrial DNA analyzed. The results confirmed that the mtDNA retrieved from the remains did match that of a female relative of Jesse James. So essentially, it was Jesse James in that Kearney, Missouri grave. I'm pretty sure there's someone for ages who claimed to be Billy the Kid.
You're right. I'm pretty sure Billy the Kid is also in this book for that reason, because obviously he was killed, buried, and then someone comes forward and goes, actually, I'm him.
Yeah.
So they have to then exhume the grave to be like,
that's
no.
That's the word I was looking for.
This is definitely exhumed. Him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is exactly where I was going. And it's...
Okay.
I think at one point they... Because I think there was... Again, all of this is from memory and might not be 100% accurate. But I remember reading this book and Jesse James was in... And I'm pretty sure what they said was that at one point there was confusion about where he was actually buried. And they exhumed a site that they thought was him, but when they got to the skull, there was no bullet hole in it, so they were like, well, obviously that can't fucking be Jesse James, because that's literally how he died. And it turned out that they'd exhumed the wrong person, and it wasn't anywhere close to where Jesse James had died or where he was where he was buried.
I would be
so whoever this person was, they just exhumed the completely wrong person. But
yeah
then eventually this guy came forward and was like, hey, no, I'm him.
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're not.
Yeah. I mean, fair play. Like, you know, there was quite a few people, I think, that came out and were like, yeah, I'm Jesse James. It's not surprising, really, is it? Like, the man,
no,
you know, of that notoriety.
I'm surprised more people don't do it these days, you know?
Yeah.
Like, because there's so many, particularly when someone's like massively famous, and okay, this is maybe a bit of a jump, but probably relevant in terms of like the scale of their fame at the time. Like when Michael Jackson died, loads of people were just like, no, he's not dead. He didn't really die. And there's all these conspiracy theories about how people have seen him and how, you know, it was all just a ploy to get out of like the ridiculous amount of debt that he was in and all this kind of stuff. So I am surprised that there's not more people that have, but then I suppose we've got a lot more DNA testing. It's a lot more freely available these days. But
yeah,
you would think someone would have tried and been like, actually, no, I'm Michael Jackson. Or even, I don't know, like I'm Michael Jackson's kid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just to try and claim something from it. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more. But back then, you can imagine it would have been. All it really takes is for you to live in like quite a small town where you can go around to your neighbours and go, actually, do you know what? I'm Jesse James. And if you've got a slightly above normal knowledge of him and the event, then a small town is quite likely to believe you.
Yeah.
And really, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there were people that did think that he was him for quite a long time until it was, you know, scientifically proven not to be.
Yeah, 100%.
And plus, so I'm not being funny. If someone came over to you and went, I'm Jesse James, your first thought wouldn't be, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Because
why
lie about it? It's just a very odd thing to lie about, particularly if he's a bad person. Why just pick someone better?
Someone who's not got two first names, right?
Yeah, literally anyone else.
In the decade that followed Jesse's assassination, stage and television has immortalized the James Younger gang, particularly Jesse. After his death, the outlaw has been presented as a frontier hero or a type of Robin Hood. However, as stated earlier, there is no proof that he shared the loot from his robberies with anyone other than his gang members. In the 1950s, Jesse was portrayed as a psychologically damaged individual rather than a societal rebel. Even though his image as a quote heroic outlaw is frequently depicted in movies, songs, and folklore, historians have given a different view. Since the late 20th century, historians have categorized him as a terrorist and self-aware vigilante who exploited local tensions to establish his own myth among the many insurgent guerrillas and vigilantes that emerged after the American Civil War. However, regardless of how you view Jesse James, be that a heroic outlaw who was only stealing from the rich, or nothing more than a psychopathic and paranoid criminal and murderer, Jesse James remains an integral figure in the stories of the Wild, Wild West. So that is our episode on the life, death, the life, crimes, and the death of Jesse Woodson James.
Yeah.
Amy, how do you feel about Jesse now? What did you think of that?
I'm going to akin it to a feeling that I'm pretty sure most people get. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's just me. But you know when you've waited ages to see a film that's huge and everyone was talking about it, like it's just a massive film that you have to see, and then you end up watching it and you think, well, that's not what I fucking expected.
Yeah.
I did it with Scarface. Knew what it was about, waited years to watch it because I just thought it doesn't really massively interest me. And then it got to a point where loads of people were like, Amy, you've got to watch it. Like, it's a classic. You have to watch this movie before you die, essentially. So I watched it and I was like, that is not even close to how I thought it was going to be. Like, the reasons I was avoiding it, or thought I was avoiding it, are completely invalid because none of them are relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. And it just blew my mind. This is very similar. I thought I knew a bit about Jesse James. Like, I think you just get in your head the whole Wild West thing, and therefore you create a narrative that you're expecting. And this wasn't... I knew he robbed banks. Yeah. Right. Outlaws do that. That's why they're outlaws. But, yeah, I didn't know he was so bad at it. You would think someone that famous for being an outlaw would be better at it. Uh-huh. And, yeah, the death is just very... I don't want to say disappointing, but it's kind of disappointing.
Unexpected. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no.
Like, you just assume that people like that, people with such a big reputation, people with such lore around them, have some sort of big, dramatic final scene in a movie death, not a shot in the back of the head, duffed in a picture death.
I think, sort of, in a way, that very much parallels Robert Ford's experience. He joined the gang thinking Jesse was, you know, he put him on a pedestal. He saw him as this godlike figure, this mythical figure. And over time, he began to realize that it's not what he expected. And Jesse James, there's a line in the film, I'm trying to remember it exactly, where Charlie says to Bob, I think it's like, quote, "You think it's all made up, don't you? You think it's all yarns and newspaper stories." And Bob, in response, says he's just a human being.
Yeah.
And I was like, that sort of perfectly encapsulates Jesse. At the end of the day, he was just a human being. He was probably a psychopath. He was a serial killer. You know, he was not this Robin Hood figure. He was not, you know, this entity. I think it's a very good sort of case of this is what he's portrayed as, and this is the expectation, and this is the reality.
Yeah.
I know that I've mentioned it a few times, but I really do recommend The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Because by the title, you would think that this is very much a film that will glorify Jesse and disparage Bob. But it's very much a film that says, okay, these are the myths and these are the legends, and we're going to strip those away. And this is Jesse James. It's a fantastic film. It's a long film. It clocks in at nearly 3 hours. It's one of those films that if you put it on as you're doing something and you fade in and out of it, you're not really going to give it, you know, its full, gravitas. It's one that you need to put on and you need to sit and you need to watch it. But it's very, very good. There's, like, the cinematography is amazing. There's a train robbery right at the beginning, which is the best shot scene I think I've ever seen in my life. It is outrageous. But highly recommend it. As I say, it's been said to be very historically accurate to Jesse and sort of those final days. But yeah, he's an interesting guy. Like, I love anything Old West. I do. I love me some Wild West films, Wild West, you know, documentaries, you know, all of that stuff. Amy, would you like to wrap this week up?
Sure. I would absolutely love to. Thank you for that. Like I say, really didn't know much about Jesse James at all. And if your name happens to be a name that's also a first name for your last name, then fuck you.
Oh my god.
No, not really. I'm sure you're lovely. It's just something that irks me. And in this case, I think I'm justified. Anyway, let's move on. Thank you so much for listening. And if I've just offended you, I'm really sorry. Please come back. I promise I can change.
Especially as hopefully next week, Amy's audio will be improved.
It will be. It will be drastically improved. I will bring a case that has been recommended to me by one of our, I think he listens. I'm pretty sure he listens. Andrew, I think you listen. If you do, hi. But it's been recommended to me by him. And is one that we've sort of done. It's a type of case that we've kind of done relatively recently, but not quite.
Right.
And that's all I'm going to say, because I think that's cryptic enough. So tune in for that next week. In the meantime, if you wish to support us like a good underwired bra, then you can comment on this episode on Spotify. You can like it. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can give us a like on Instagram. Why don't you go on our Instagram, go back to all of our previous posts and like every single one. There's a challenge for you.
If you do and you send us proof, we'll... I don't know.
What will we do, Dom?
I don't know.
Please do. Tell us. What will we do?
I don't know.
if you go back
Shout
and
you
do
out
that
in an episode, I guess.
And send us proof, we will... I don't know. Send you something.
Okay. I don't know what, but okay.
Me neither. We'll send you a beer with a picture of our faces on it.
Okay.
That's worth it, right? I think that's worth it. And hey, my word is my bond, so you know that will happen. Oh shit, we're going to end up sending a beer to like Canada, aren't we? Fuck. Anyway, just
Brie,
do that.
Don't like any of our folks.
No. but yes, your support is always greatly appreciated. We are but humble indie podcast creators, and any support that you give us is always greatly appreciated.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we can only say stay spooky.
Stay very, very, very spooky, you beautiful people. So, if you put together an outlaw gang, what would they be called, Ames?
The Backdoor Band.
What would your gang be called?
Is the sexy dance selling it to you? I don't even know if it's sexy. No, in all seriousness, I'd want to be called something scary. Maybe like the... I don't know. You've put me on the spot here. You have to prepare me for these things. Because if you don't prepare me, then I come out with shit like Backdoor Bandits.
The Backdoor Bandits. Well, I mean, to be fair, your MO could be like when you rob banks, you always go through the back. You never go around the front. Like...
I mean, if you take off the robbing back spot, that's basically my motto anyway.
And on that note...